Order at 1335, Senator French, Huggins, and Kukesh. And I say thanks to each of you for making it. They were obviously, were the only guys with having any staying power left on this committee. So here we are. What we'd like to do today, we pull forward Senate Bill 271. Commissioner Barton is here to be able to speak to us on that, NEPA. And I think we've heard this previously. This is under previously heard. And that essentially, I think it's one of those, it's important for us to look at moving this out today if at all possible. So we'll be looking for any thoughts that committee members had. So Commissioner Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Barton, Commissioner of DOT and Public Facilities. And I just am going to take 2 or 3 minutes. I would just like to emphasize to the committee the importance that I attach to this bill and the ability of the state to assume the NEPA responsibilities for the Federal Highway Administration. This is a opportunity that's only offered to, I think it's either 4 or 5 other states. I think there's probably 45 other states that would like to have it. To me, it is just rounding out the state's role in NEPA. I think, frankly, that this is a pilot program for this reauthorization, but I think in the next reauthorization, it will be available to all states. It is somewhat akin to the state assuming the fisheries management for the fisheries. It's somewhat akin to the state wanting subsistence management. To me, it's just part of the statehood. DEC is going through with the assumption of the NPDES permits. This is in that same role. There is the cost. I think the fiscal notes of $500,000 are in that range. But I feel it's more expensive not to do it than it is to do it. I believe that we can better serve Alaska and by assuming these responsibilities and be more responsive and perhaps even get some projects out a little sooner. So that's all I have to say on that, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I'll get out of your hair.
Yep. If you could, just a second, Commissioner Barton. We are one of 6 states. Is that correct?
It's either 5 or 6.
Five states that will have the opportunity to be part of the pilot. Alaska, California, Oklahoma, Ohio, and Texas for 6 years. To expire August the 10th, 2011, and it's your expectation come 2000, well, here shortly, it'll just be self-perpetuating, you think, this program with some modifications.
Well, 2011 is when the next highway bill reauthorization would occur, and I think as a part of that, that all states will have this opportunity.
Right, and then in the intermediate, that says the state may not submit its application till rulemaking is complete, that's ongoing, and we must advertise an application, solicit public comment, and each of those are yet to be accomplished. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Federal Highways, I believe, was given 9 months to put the rules together.
Right. Questions for Commissioner Barton?
I have one.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That rulemaking is behind. How far behind are they? Do you know?
And I don't know the answer to that.
I just saw that. You know? Because if you only have 9 months to do it, and if it takes them another 2 or 3 months to do it, you're pretty much behind the 8 ball.
That was the deadline. Mm-hmm. But in talking with Federal Highways a month or so ago about this, they anticipated kind of July, August time frame for having the rules out.
So that just bites into the pilot time is would be reasonable, I think, to expect.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Commissioner Barton? Yes, Senator French.
Forgive me if I asked this last hearing, but sometimes I have a selective memory of...
I have that.
Yeah. We can just redo this hearing over and over. Is it your understanding, Commissioner, that you'll essentially be taking over all federal highway projects? Is this really going to be selective takeover, or is the state going to assume during the duration of the pilot program, you know, authority for all federal highway projects?
As the program is structured, the state could choose to apply it selectively, but it's my intent that we assume it for everything.
Thank you. That's my understanding, at least, but I just want to get that on the record. And I have one question for some legal person, if that person's going to appear at the hearing.
Yeah, we have Peter Pucci. Are you online? Hello, Peter?
Yeah.
A question for you.
Okay.
Hi, Mr. Pucci. It's Hollis French here in Juneau. My question is about Section 1. And line 7, it says the Attorney General may waive immunity, but shouldn't we really read that as a must? I mean, isn't it sort of the requirement that we waive immunity? It's not as if we can assume the project and not waive immunity. We've got to waive immunity if we do assume the project. Isn't that right?
Through the chair, Senator French, my understanding of the way we drafted the statute is that there's a potential separation of powers issue, that is, the legislature couldn't direct the Attorney General to waive immunity. However, before we assumed any NEPA powers or duties, by subsequent memorandum, the Attorney General would have to weigh in and would either on a project specific basis or for all projects, the Attorney General would have to specifically waive immunity. So that waiver will have to occur at some point in time. I hope that answered your question.
I think you gave me that answer once before, but I thank you for restating it. And I guess my last question is for the commissioner, and that is, this is a 6-year pilot project.
It is. Part of the 6 years has already passed, however.
And if worse comes to worse and we go a year or two into this and it just turns out to be a train wreck, you know, I assume there'll be some mechanism by which we decide to pull back and go back to the way we were before.
I don't anticipate that this will be a train wreck. I think it's a golden opportunity for the state, but should it be a train wreck, I'm sure there's some escape mechanism.
We would at least consider not taking over more federal highway projects. We'd probably have to finish the ones we've started. You know, they're not going to take them back if there's some litigation issue that we're suddenly, you know, fighting in court. I mean, that's the real issue, is we wind up being a responsible party to defend these against a suit. But we would perhaps rethink our decision to take over more projects.
That's certainly one escape mechanism.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And finally, Mr. Commissioner, but this really allows us to take control of our own destiny. It's our geographical area. It's us controlling our destiny rather than us conveniently say it's their fault. It's us. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. Yes, sir.
Okay. Other questions? The will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that this bill be passed on to the next committee of referral with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objections? Thank you very much. We'll take about a 2-minute break. order. At this time, we bring Senate Bill 304 before the committee. Previously heard, it's the intent today of the chair that, given that we're all satisfied with the progress, to be able to move this out today. Now, I think it's fair to say that we went over this relatively well last time around. However, we have a new person on board with us, Mr. John Torgerson, who now is Mr. Aviation. And I think, in my estimation, this bill does two things. It causes a bright shining light on an issue that's emerging that I think needs to have a bright shining light on it, and it will force the issue of some resolution of it. And I think if you look at it from unbiased sets of eyes, that the potential leap in the cost to, in this case, Diamond Parking and others, was probably out of the ordinary and uncalled for. So with that, Mr. John Torgerson, are you online?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. And actually, I identified at the last hearing, and I was just going to give you an update. It'll only take a minute. We have released Department of Law, attorney for aviation, to engage the attorneys for.
Yeah, John, just very quickly, put yourself on the record and affiliation.
Sure. John Torgerson, Deputy Commissioner of Department of Transportation for Aviation. And the office is 1900 Aviation Avenue in Anchorage.
Yeah,
so with that, the update from the last meeting you had is that since this issue was before the Department of Law and the selection process for a hearing officer being appealed, that our advice was to have the attorney for the Department of Law contact the attorneys for Diamond and see if there was some middle ground. We just recently authorized that to happen. The meetings have not taken place yet, but they will in the very near future. And then I brought this issue up to the Airline Affairs Committee, which, as you remember, the last discussion under the residual agreement, if we don't collect money from one entity, we collect it from the airline. So I apprised them of the issue, and they were going to write a few letters to the chairman and the members of the committee outlining their position. That's all I have to report to you as of today, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thanks, John. Questions for Ms. Torgerson? Okay. Thanks, John. Who else do we have? John, is there anybody here from DOT that has anything to add on this? Is there anyone else to make testimony on Senate Bill 304? And I think just for the record, I'd like to clarify, this is only my second year here, but getting involved with the airport last year, we did bonding for expansion of the airport facility, and the rationale and the payee given for that was going to be, for the most part, commercial landing fees, for the most part, in that respect, was logistics. The other major thing we did was bonding for rental car facility, and that was going to be by an assessment fee. And one of the things that a number of people insisted on was that we not be excluding people that were off the airport with rental cars or other kinds of businesses. And quite frankly, I think 304 is well placed in the respect that it calls to task the process, and that everybody's treated equally, whatever that turns out to be, and that to move this forward is good for the airport, good for the industry, and will bring some clarification in the long run. Are there other questions or comments on Senate Bill 304? Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and take the duty today and move
that the only chance to do this.
Senate Bill 304 be passed out of committee onto the next committee, a referral with individual recommendations, and I don't see a fiscal note.
Okay, is there any objections? Okay, and that's with zero fiscal note, and it goes on to finance. Thank you very much. And we'll take another 1 minute break. Senate Transportation come back to order. Senate Bill 300, sponsor statement we see, and we have Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When last we left, had several questions on FDIC law regulations and so on. I think each one of you should have received some copies of that to be able to look at that law. We also can provide some examples, and staff just remembered he hadn't brought them with him, just to show how it is disclosed on some of the contracts in the state of Alaska when there is a negative equity situation. And there are a number of different wordings, but primarily they do all show the that someone is financing and what we called an upside-down position in the new contract on their vehicle, something that I don't particularly encourage, but something that which current practices and current financing arrangements we need to accommodate. And once again, just to clarify, the intent of the bill is to put the in-house financing arms of manufacturers, General Motors Acceptance Corporation, Ford Motor Credit, Chrysler Corporation, et cetera, on an equal footing with the banks in the state of Alaska. Banks primarily are regulated by federal government laws, and the non-regulated finance institutions have to also comply with state law. This bill will simply eliminate any question as to whether or not the practices of state of these finance institutions would comply with state law, and put them on an equal footing with the federal government. And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. I can provide some copies. As you can see, we got there for staff. What you're going to see here are some examples of vehicles being financed for what we'll call Upside Down Joe. And he lives at 555 Downside Drive in Fairbanks. So if you take a look at the first contract there, which is a lease agreement, on the lease agreement, you'll see that it lays out the entire situation for him. And if I have this correct, you can take a look at the second page, which is the extension of the agreement. This shows outstanding prior balance, 3586. That's how that'll be disclosed. And on a lease, yes.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Question, because I'm not familiar with these, and so the outstanding prior balance represents what exactly?
If the vehicle, for an example, had $13,586 trade-in value, and it was only worth in actual cash value $10,000.
I see. So this box is where you capture that sort of upside-down value, if you will.
Yes.
And this is taking as trade-in that upside-down car and applying it to the purchase of a new car.
Correct.
Got it. Thank you.
And in this case, it's a lease.
But the point is it's clearly written.
Yes, clearly written and disclosed as to what it is and where it is, which, you know, we don't like the situation, but, you know, it should be clearly disclosed, and this does that. And on a lease, it's critical because a lease is a little different under different regulation, and it could be considered to be a personal loan if it's not disclosed properly. So this brings that into compliance. Secondly, you get into Upside Down Joe there on page 3, and you'll see this is a conditional sales contract or a retail installment contract is what I should say. And here again, if you look about part way down, two-thirds of the way down, you'll see under item 4, amounts to be paid on your behalf to Ford Motor Credit Company, negative equity, $3,586. Here again, it's clearly disclosed. And it's done so that there's no question.
The used term, the commonly used term, is negative equity. That's what you expect.
That's one of the terms that we use, and that's what in general we would call it, negative equity. You'll see it's called different things by different finance institutions per their internal interpretations. But in the industry, it would be called negative equity. And behind closed doors, it's upside down. So old upside Joan Joe here. The next one you'll see.
And Mr. Chairman, and just for, this is how it will appear in the future if we pass this bill, or this is how it appears now?
Well, we're doing, it does that now, but it, in with banks, but now we're going to ask Ford Credit to be able to do that and be in total compliance with state law.
So if your documentation today, if you were to do this kind of arrangement, would not look like this?
It would still look like that, but there's some question as to whether or not it complies with state law.
I see.
And this just removes that question.
Thank you.
This brings the Auto Industry Credit Associations into compliance with state law.
Yes, and clarifies the matter. So there's no gray area here. This is simply makes it black and white. You look at the next one down, and it'll say it's a conditional sales contract. And here it says excess of lien over trade value, about a third of the way down on the right-hand side there.
Which page are we on now?
I think that would be 5 or 6. Let me see.
5 out of 9, 6 out of 9, right. Excess.
6 out of 9.
Okay.
And you can see about partway down there is a little arrow that points at it. It's 3586. Excess of lien over trade value. Again, different institutions use this different terms to describe what it is. That's a bank contract that you're looking there from Wells Fargo Bank.
I see.
And then go back to page 8 out of 9, and here you'll take a look at Alaska USA Federal Credit Union, and here it's to Ford Credit for trade-in payoff. Which is the same thing, but it's, in this case, additional money to pay off the trade-in. Now, that basically is how they're described in different places, all meaning the same thing. But in this case, we would make sure that by law, everything is disclosed exactly the same way as it would be done under the federal rules under Regulation M and Regulation Z, and authorized under state law to be able to do so.
Question for Senator Seekins. Senator Seekins, I think the one question that I had last time was whether or not there was objections for any financial institutions, and I'm not sure what you got. I think Ms. Grumman checked on that. What feedback do we get?
They have no problem. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't find anybody that objected, and I did talk with Ed Sniffen from the Attorney General's office and asked him if he had any questions, and he said no, he thought it was good legislation. He brought himself up to speed on it and examined both the federal regulations and this proposed law and had no objection to it.
Yeah, I have an email here that's essentially reflecting the opinion of Alaska Bankers Association, which says they have no problem with it and gave it their okay.
Right.
Are there other questions for Senator Seekins? If there aren't, I would like to move Senate Bill 300 out. Do I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 300 to the next committee referral with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Are there objections? Okay, if not, we'll be moved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yep. Members?
We're going to take about a 3-minute break. Okay, we'll come back to order. Senate Bill 261, Traffic Safety Corridors, and John, are you the one? Okay, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, John McKenna, Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for Highways and Facilities, and I've got plenty of backup here in case the questions are technical or I can't answer them. With me today is Jeff Audison, Director of Program Development, Cindy Cashin, who's the head of the state's Highway Safety Office in the department, Kurt Smith, the state traffic engineer, and John Manley, our legislative liaison. I'll jump right to the map, Mr. Chairman. What you see here is a map that was prepared by our traffic engineers in out of Central Region in Anchorage that shows 28 years worth of accidents, fatal accidents, on the Seward Highway between Girdwood and Potter Marsh. The little boxes that describe each accident are two different colors. You've got yellow for a fatal accident, and the blue ones we decided to put on there or change the color of the yellow ones that show alcohol or drug-related accidents. So that's 28 years of accidents. It shows some clusters where there are definitely some high rates of accidents based on the traffic that's there. Shows where additional enforcement can help to reduce the accident rate. And what's fairly clear on most of that is that a lot of those accidents are a result of driver behavior. They're not a result of road conditions. There are some where the road conditions are, the geometry of the road do present a problem, but for the most part, a lot of those accidents can be prevented by increased enforcement and the resultant change in driver behavior habits. And that's really the essence of this bill, is it allows us to identify a segment of road that has a higher than average accident rate based on criteria, and to establish a safety corridor in that. And along with the establishment of the safety corridor and the associated signage is double traffic fines in that area and increased enforcement.
Questions for Deputy Commissioner? Senator French.
I'll jump in. As far as the designation of a highway safety corridor, will there be any role for the Department of Public Safety to play? Because it just strikes me that, you know, you guys are sort of like equal participants in this. You know the road conditions, but they're out there, you know, working them. I mean, not to say your crews aren't out working there as well, but of course we know our state troopers are sort of the folks we rely on to enforce the rules that you're going to put into place. So maybe just talk to me about how you see that working.
Yeah, actually, Senator French, through the chair, that's a very good question. The original bill states that the department will designate portions of a highway to be traffic safety corridors, but we have a proposed amendment to this, and what the proposed amendment does addresses that, and it says that the Commissioner of Transportation shall consult with the Commissioner of Public Safety and may consult with other local, state, and federal agencies with responsibilities for traffic safety. You know, we don't want to be doing this unilaterally. We want very close coordination and cooperation with public safety. It's likely that most of the roads that would have traffic safety corridors, the enforcement entity is the state troopers, or are the state troopers. In discussion with them, we've met with them 2 weeks ago in Anchorage before we had a public meeting on this particular subject in Wasilla, and that was the first time that they'd seen these maps, and they were really impressed with them. In fact, the one behind you, Connect Goose Bay Road, what they liked about that one is it showed some little grape clusters of accidents, the red dots there, and they looked at that and said, you know, this is an opportunity to focus a lot of our enforcement in these areas, because if this is where the fatal accidents are occurring, this is where we need to be focusing more of our enforcement. In a particular area, let's pick on Connect Goose Bay. That happens to be the top road in the state as far as accidents go based on the criteria that we're using. In increasing the enforcement, that we would work with the troopers. We would probably pay for additional enforcement over time for those people using our safety sanction funds. We'd also work with the Wasilla Police Department in increasing the enforcement there. So a long answer to your question is, yeah, we would be working with all the public safety entities to make sure that it's an effective program.
This is a little, I consider the maps very valuable. I mean, they're just, they're well done, and they do give users of the road some insight, if you will, into where you need to be most cautious. I wonder what efforts the department's considering making as far as publicizing this information, because I just think most folks in the public would love to be able to look at the road and know where the accidents happen. And it's a great tool, and I think it's something that's worth getting the word out beyond the insides of this room, either through a web presence or, you know, disseminating to community councils, you know, making handouts available to folks in the public, your bus drivers, school bus drivers ought to have this. It's just real, real good information.
Yeah, Senator French, through the chair, we did have that public meeting in Wasilla 2 weeks ago, and on April 4th, the department will be meeting with the joint Palmer and Wasilla Chamber of Commerce to give them a similar presentation and look at the maps and the road areas in their area. And clearly, there are three very bad road segments in Mat-Su Borough, and it's a driver behavior issue. It's not a result of intersections or bad road geometry so much, but people driving too fast for conditions, a lot faster than the rest of the traffic, alcohol and drug use, serious problems that enforcement is, you know, it's a has a as a track record of having a positive effect on those accidents.
As a member of the Department of Public Safety Budget Subcommittee, I'm going to be interested in having these available to show to the commissioner at some point. If you have smaller versions, I'd love to have them, because
Senator French, I will. Would you like them mounted or loose, or how would you like them?
Mounted.
You got it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, the proposed amendment that you have before there does a couple of things. It's got some miscellaneous clarifying language changes in there. There's a new paragraph that, as I stated earlier, gives the DOT commissioner direction on what criteria and factors to consider in designating the safety corridors, and it also requires that consultation with the public safety commissioner. Then the third item it does, it's a new Section 6 that was requested by the court system regarding the accounting for the double fines in the court locations where separate accounting is not achievable. And it allows a portion of that increased penalty to go back to the department to be used for increased enforcement and education programs. And also before you is a draft of the criteria that we would be using in establishing these traffic zones. This criteria would put in our traffic safety our traffic manual, state traffic manual. Instead of being in regulation or in statute, if they're in our traffic manual, it allows us to make quicker adjustments to it as we need to, should certain criteria not be adequate or need something less stringent. It does have the effect of regulation, but it allows us to adjust it quicker. That's also where our signage requirements and everything else is included. There's a section in there that says what threshold would have to be exceeded in order to trigger a traffic safety corridor, as well as the threshold that has to be reached again to decommission one. I fully expect that when we do establish a safety corridor, that there be a considerable amount of publicity and press as a result of it. And the public needs to be made aware that there's a stretch of road that's got some serious accidents there, and we're getting serious about it too by increased enforcement, double fines, and so on. Similarly, when the accident rate has reduced in that area, the success of the program shows, we're going to certainly try and get some publicity there that shows that, you know, the drivers are behaving themselves, and we've reduced the rate of accidents there. I think there's an opportunity for good publicity on both ends.
Chairman, are you ready for a motion to adopt the amendment?
Please.
I would. This looks like amendment number one. I would move amendment number one to SB 261.
Okay. Is there objections? Okay. Would you like to further expound on the? Are there any additional things you wanted to mention about the amendment, John? Amendment.
Well, Senator Huggins, I could get into detail on the threshold that is set for triggering one of these things. It's pretty much our traffic engineers made the recommendation based on their statistical knowledge. One thing you'll see in here that we talk about a three-year period. You can to decommission one, you've got to show that the fatal plus major injury rate per mile of corridor falls below the statewide average for a three-year period. That's about the minimum you'd want to have in time to have any statistical significance. They would prefer more, but we don't want to see corridors lasting forever. Right. We want to see them put in place, some positive results, but statistically significant results, and then a decommissioning of them. Right. We're also looking at not putting them everywhere. We'd like to see no more than 10 statewide, and preferably only 5 or 6, because when you have too many of them, they lose their impact. Yeah. It's got to be a serious problem. We put them in place and get serious about the enforcement.
Well, John, let me ask you a couple of things. I think we talked about headlights the last time, and I don't remember whether it's in the bill, but the Seward Highway's example, as I recall, is mandatory headlights. Is that accurate? Is that a provision that we want to put in any of the corridors that you have your headlights on?
Senator Huggins, we could certainly do that. I don't think we need to have it in the bill. You know, I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, I don't. Safety, anybody from the safety community want to comment?
Jeff.
Senator Huggins, you've hit on a topic that's been near and dear to my heart for about 20 years. A long time ago, I looked at this issue and looked at research in both the Scandinavian countries and in Canada. In both those locations, they have required mandatory headlights year-round. Throughout the year, daytime, nighttime, and what they found is in high latitude locations where we have a lot of the day is at low sun angles. Sun's low on the horizon, it causes long shadows across the road, and the other thing that happens in our latitudes, including Alaska, is we get dirty cars. We have a lot of dirt on the roads from spring breakup, and that combination of kind of a gray, dark car in shadow, and you probably notice it right now this time of year, cars in broad daylight can be very hard to see. And the research showed in those countries, and this is now research that's probably 15 or 20 years old, but I doubt it's really changed, is that mandatory headlights were reducing accidents by as much as 20% in those locations. Now, I can't think of anything else society could do that could yield such a benefit for such a low cost.
Yeah. Well, I would prefer today not to take on the issue of lights around the state, but if we chip away at it by making a point, it appears to me that may be reasonable to look at it for safety quarters. I don't know. I mean, how people feel about that. I mean, I personally, when I start my car up, I turn on the lights, and you know, some of my family has newer cars. They're always on. They just automatically come on and off, but they're on. When you drive out of driveway, you have your lights on. But it appears to me that one of the things that I would ask us to look at was whether or not mandatory lights, no matter what time of the year, for a traffic safety quarter, that it be there and it be posted so that when people go, just like the Seward Highway.
From my reading of the literature, I think it would be an excellent addition to this bill. It would, wow. Because even a quarter second, a half a second of additional awareness of an oncoming car that you wouldn't otherwise see because of that long shadow and that darkness of the vehicle itself can save a life.
Yes, Senator Cooke?
I was just saying I don't think we ought to get into putting that into the bill. I think the commissioner has that authority by the amendment we just adopted to put that as part of the criteria.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand. Yes. But I just want to make sure we kind of have, you know, some insight into what we're doing here because it gets to some other issues. I saw someplace that only rural roads, and I guess it begs the question of what definition we're using for rural, because one of the roads that we're looking at, that and that's one of them, that it may violate rural right off the get-go. The Parks Highway may violate rural, but I don't know what definition we're using.
Yeah, actually, I don't believe the Parks Highway would be considered. It's not an urban road, right through there. It is a rural road, and the reason
that's in the city limits is not.
Well,
I can speak to that.
Go ahead, Jeff.
The definition of rural and urban usually falls to the Census Bureau definition, which looks at two combinations, not only the total population, but the density of that population. So they actually declare certain parts of the state to be urban and other parts of the state. And most of Mat-Su remains rural despite the high numbers of population.
And the reason the difference in designation is on these rural highway segments, the accidents are head-ons and running off the road and those kind of accidents, whereas in an urban situation like the Seward Highway right through the middle of Anchorage or Minnesota, they tend to be intersection-related. And so by establishing a corridor when you've got point sources there for the accidents, it's not as effective.
Right. No. The other, one of the other items we talked about was having the digital readout speed signs. Is your intent to do something with that? Will that fit within 5,000? Because I think 5,000 is our estimate, right, for the cost of doing a corridor. Is it $5,000?
Yes. Yeah. And that would be the, Mr. Chairman, that would be the cost of putting up the non-electronic signs that are there. We do have a number of the reader boards on order at this point, as well as the speed limit signs. Yeah. I signed
speed
that
cards.
The other day. Yeah, the speed
My
cards.
My assumption is they're rather expensive. I don't know. Is that what would one of the digital readouts run?
The big signs?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a few tens of thousands.
But we have an inventory of some.
Yeah. We also, there are much more reasonably priced are small signs that are actually attached to the same standard, not the ones that you see like going into the airport in Anchorage, the cart. They actually have signs that are attached to the same post as everything else, solar powered with a little battery that does read your speed and tell you how fast you're going.
Our level of confidence, if we use the criteria that you've drafted out, that there won't be a large number of communities raise their hand and say we qualify. Our confidence level, that's not going to happen.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so right now we know that Seward Highway, Parks, Connect Goose Bay, maybe Palmer Wasilla Highway, maybe, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. What others do we anticipate that would qualify if we put this in place today?
Mr. Chairman, you mentioned the Seward Highway. Actually, between Anchorage and Seward, there were probably three or four segments in there that could be considered safety corridors. In fact, there was a fatal accident there yesterday, and we could easily just consider that whole section a safety corridor instead of having four separate corridors in there. But there were four or five right off the bat that come out. The three in Wasilla we mentioned, Palmer Wasilla Highway, the Parks Highway there, and Connect Goose Bay, as well as the Seward Highway. The four maps that you have here.
Right.
Now that's just the central region. We have not crunched the data in northern region, but typically the vehicle mile traveled is not as high up there as it is in the more populated area here. So it may not be enough there to trigger it.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm just thinking about making a whole segment of road a safety corridor, whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. I don't know what the answer to that is, but other committee members have a thought on that. I mean, it's your business. You're the professional. We're just trying to think through it for a moment that we aren't wishing for something here that when delivered, we won't like what it looks like criteria-wise.
Look, Senator Huggins, I'm just pulling from memory, but on the Seward Highway, the stretch from Potter Marsh that you see on this other map, from Potter Marsh to Girdwood, definitely fits the criteria. There's a small piece beyond there to turn off to Whittier that doesn't. But once you get around the corner and go up over Turnigan Pass to the Y, it all meets the criteria. So if you've got a long stretch of highway with a small piece in between that is not, it makes more sense to consider the larger stretch.
Right.
Only because I know the road, let me just talk real quick about the Parks Highway. From Lucas out to Big Lake Road, we know that someplace past 09 is scheduled to be rejuvenated.
The question is whether you see as part of this process that part of our checklist would be to look at moving that forward, given, you know, some available funding. I'm trying to figure, you know, how far are we going to go with this, and what's reasonable to expect, and what is, you know, we're just kind of take off the table. In the case of the Parks Highway, as an example.
Yeah.
I just use that as an example. I only say that because I'm a little more familiar with that area.
Mr. Chairman, I think a look at that could accelerate a project. If you see that there is a significant problem with the geometry of the road, that's a major factor, that could accelerate it.
Yeah. Because, you know, to be quite frank, I was talking to some people in another area, Mat-Su in this case, and they were complaining why they only got $5 million versus $10 million, that they could do it in one fell swoop. And I said, well, let me remind you, there are some people that live on the Parks Highway in this case that think that they should get that $5 million because you don't have a safety problem in your area. So be careful what you wish for when you start cross-leveling priorities. The other part, though, is which gets me to what we just talked about, the Parks Highway, is how in-depth you capture the criteria for making these corridors go away. I mean, we talked about the safety part of it, but so that when you and I have passed on one of these days, that people that are looking through the regulations, how far in depth you go as far as the process that we look for, besides statistics, safety statistics. Well, you know, I think you mentioned before the three E's, as I think mm-hmm. you referred to it. Will the three E's be part of the criteria in the regulation? Do you anticipate?
Would that be for decommissioning one?
Right. Well, I mean, just in the mentality of the things that your organization would do as you looked at a safety corridor. Okay, we say, okay, we got signage in place, we got additional troopers, we're collecting double fines, and then how much further the expectation institutionally in DOT would be.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, you know, the first thing we can do, the immediate thing we can do is two of the three E's, the education and enforcement.
Right.
The engineering is the reconstruction of the road.
Right.
It takes much longer, but it would, in many cases, necessarily follow. It takes a little longer to get the project out.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand. I'm just talking about the trigger mechanism that people, when, you know, Mr. Otteson has moved on as his replacement, wouldn't say, I wonder what those guys meant back in those days when they were putting safety quarters in. Whether, I'm not saying it needs to be in, doesn't, but I'm just trying to figure out what your intentions are in that respect, so that new guys coming on can pick up whatever we have
mm-hmm.
and we'll capture the essence of what your intent is today when we do this. I'm not telling you how to write your regulations. I'm just trying to get a feel for how we do that. The final part for myself at this point is that, and John, I've told you this before, I think it's probably in DOT's best interest that we have a review process like this, so next year at this time, given we have X number of corridors, where you come back and say, you know, this is the results midway on this corridor, and if it, you know, takes money or something that you need help from the legislature, I think would be of benefit to DOT and Department of Public Safety. Your thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we would pass up an opportunity to blow our own horn on those cases. If I could digress a little bit and talk about our state traffic engineers, one of our programs that we do in highway safety that our traffic engineers do is the HSIP, or Highway Safety Improvement Program, and that's one of a lot of little construction projects where you have high rates of accidents, and you identify those, and small engineering improvements, turn pockets, turn lanes, and that sort of thing. When we do those, as soon as we make those improvements, we go back there and start measuring the effectiveness of it. And there's an almost instant, you know, success rate with those. You put the turn lanes in, and you start seeing fewer and fewer accidents. And our traffic engineers, politely set of bean counters in those cases. They like to see the results, and they keep track on them.
Okay. Other questions? I know Senator French has got to go here in just a moment.
Just briefly for Mr. Otteson, this bill doesn't really contain what I see as an authorization to give the commissioner the power to order that highway lights be on, and I think Senator Kukesh is right, we don't need to get into that. My quick question for you is, does that authority exist someplace else, either in regulation or in statute, so that the commissioner can pick up on, I think, Senator Huggins' excellent suggestion, which you sound in favor of, which is that in any highway traffic safety corridor, we order lights flipped on as you enter that zone?
Through the chair, Senator French, I'm not aware of that authority generally within the DOT commissioner's powers right now, and that's kind of why I was thinking it might be a good minor addition to this bill, that in addition to designating the corridors, we would require headlights to be used 24/7 on those corridors. But
then just a follow-up.
I could provide you some information and some research, more recent research, to sort of look at whether this is still being effective, because it was, like I said, 15, 20 years ago, it was a glaringly effective.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, at least two of the members of the committee, I think Senator Kukesh feels the same way, that we all think that's a great idea and we'd love to see it put onto this legislation. I don't want to hold it up because, you know, today's paper mm-hmm. has yet another accident on the part of the road that's near my town. And so I think
we can make that modification in the next committee, which is finance.
Yeah.
And I think it's important we do move it on for just, yeah. I mean, we're still making headlines, yeah. and we can make those modifications. So the chair would be open for a movement of the bill.
Happy to, Mr. Chairman. I would move that SB
261
be moved on to the next committee referral with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Are there objections? Very good. But we do want the headlights to look at that, so if we need to.
I'll do that research.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, you know, somebody had the authority to put those signs up and designate that in the Seward Highway, and it wasn't done through statute. Yeah. So.
The other thing, and I think it's part of our public affairs strategy, is that I know in Mat-Su we've got some of the Chamber of Commerce is laid on. The maps are there. But to get things to community councils, to schools, particularly if kids driving back and forth, high schools, that we have a relatively comprehensive strategy to get that information out. But
yeah,
it's a good idea. We just want to do whatever we can to help out. And hopefully you don't have those problems in your area, Senator Kukesh.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.